Welcome to the Australian Finance Podcast, a podcast for people who want to learn more about their personal finances and get the most from their money. This series is hosted by Kate Campbell from How To Money and Owen Raskovich from Rask Finance.
The Australian Finance Podcast is provided for educational purposes only. The information is general in nature and does not take into account your needs, goals, or objectives. What that means is the information does not apply to you specifically. So consider getting the advice of a licensed and trusted professional before acting on the information.
Hi, Owen. Welcome back to the Australian Finance Podcast.
Thanks, Kate. It's wonderful to be here.
Yes.
What are we talking about today?
Our favourite topic, which is index funds, exchange-traded funds, and managed funds.
Cool. So we've talked about these a little bit in the past.
Yep.
But we're just going to go into a little bit more detail.
Yep. What they are, how they work, and why you might like to look into them more.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay, so let's just start off with a neat quote, which is this person says, I have enough money to retire and live comfortably for the rest of my life. The problem is I have to die next week. And that's a joke because it means that like this person wasn't prepared and they've got enough money, but it's going to run out pretty quick as soon as they stop having an income coming in. So the lessons from this episode is hopefully going to be structured, or they're going to be structured in a way that hopefully that's not you, and your money can, you'll grow wealth quickly, as quickly as possible, but over a long time, and then you'll have enough to maybe retire comfortably.
So get rich slowly.
Get rich slowly, or just get rich.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't even try to do it quickly. Just try and get rich. That should be the first goal. Okay. So why should someone start investing now?
Well, I think investing is good for everyone to think about, and there's so many simple ways to get started, which we'll be talking about in this episode. It doesn't have to be complicated at all, and you can put steps in place now to make sure you have a really comfortable retirement and ease those challenges that you face throughout life, whether that be you're investing now, and then when you want to buy a house in 10 years' time, you've built up enough wealth to be able to do that comfortably. Or you want to make sure you don't have to rely on the government system when you reach retirement age, because who knows what they'll have changed by then. But investing's really important to build wealth over time and make sure you've got enough for everything that life throws at you.
And so we're talking about retirement, but it's not just retirement, is it? Yeah. I suppose you don't have to be 50, 60 odd to get the benefit of it. What would you say to someone who says they don't have enough?
Well, I think you can start investing. There's apps now for $5. So
you've talked about them in the past.
Yeah. So it's you can invest through brokers, which is where you can buy and sell shares and exchange traded funds from as little as $500 in some cases. So it's not really an excuse anymore. The barriers to entry have never been lower. And it's easy to get started.
Cool. I think there's a quote that says, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The next best time is today.
Yeah.
One of the little case studies or little scenarios that we just did, or we just put together, was used one of the calculators, which you can access on our site or on the Money Smart site. And when I say our site, I mean the Rask Finance site. There's a compound interest calculator there. And just done a little example of someone that saves $50 a week to invest. And they invested at 10% per year. And they do that for 30 years. And the question is, how much would you have? So $50 a week, 10% return, 30 years. And the answer is around about $428,000. So 50 bucks a week.
Yeah.
It's not a lot for some people. It is for others, but it's not a lot. So what we have there, we've got the amount that you're saving.
Yep.
That's the 50 bucks. We've got the return that you're getting, which is 10%, which is reasonably high, especially if you have to think about tax, but 10%. And then you've got time, which is 30 years. So those are the three ingredients.
Yeah.
How much do you save to invest? What return do you get? How long do you let it work? And those are the things. And if you
Half $1 million can drastically change your life.
Well, that's it. And this is only this one example. You might if you're doing this, you might also have super, which would be saving probably that amount or more.
Yeah.
If you're working.
So that's the compulsory savings from your employer.
Yep.
Essentially.
We've done an episode on that. And then you would also have probably a property, like a home that you live in. So there's that. So this is not your only retirement or nest egg. But if you were just saving 50 bucks a week and you just did it rain, hail, or shine, you would be left with a pretty good lump of cash. But one of the things, and particularly if there's a young person listening to this, so 20s or even younger,
yeah,
It's pretty hard to think like 30 years ahead.
30 years is a long time away. Like anything could happen. But I think putting just a simple plan, even if it's just $50 a week right now, into place, nothing too complex, and it could really drastically change your life in 30 years' time. And I've talked to people on both ends of the spectrum. So people who started investing in their 20s and 30s and have a really different lifestyle now that they can live comfortably in retirement, and then people who never invested, never just for whatever circumstances, all different circumstances, but then they are now having to live on the pension. So it's really different ends of the spectrum. And I think you can change your circumstances, especially if you're starting out in your 20s. You have a lot of chance, opportunity now.
Mm, that's a great point. You know, we've talked about being an owner of the economy as opposed to letting it own you and run your life. It's having that control of your money and your destiny. One of the questions that we had come through on the podcast already, which was about building wealth from the share market.
Yeah.
And the person had an investment property, but they didn't own their own home. They didn't live, they weren't an owner occupier. And the question was effectively, can you build wealth? And this person was in their 50s. And the answer is absolutely yes. Yeah. Even though we say 30 years, it doesn't matter if you've got 10 years or 20 years, it's still relevant, right?
Mm.
It's never too late to start.
I think that's the important thing, just get started. It can seem really scary and nerve-wracking, but once you've learned the basics and you understand what you're doing, just give it a shot.
Mm. It's funny. I run another podcast called the Australian Investors Podcast, and I ask them, the guests in the show, what is their number one lesson if they could go back and tell themselves when they were younger, and that's just to start.
Yeah.
And it's a huge thing, right?
You'll probably make some mistakes at the start. I certainly have, and I'm still making mistakes. But if you do it yourself, you actually learn from those mistakes, and you can change the way you do things. And 30 years is a long time, so you can make mistakes and change course and change your investment strategy. But you can just, as long as you keep putting some money away every week, every month. And that nest egg slowly grows in the background while you're working, traveling, living life.
Mm. Two of the reasons why people would invest are dividends and distributions, and you get those from each of the things that we're talking about in this episode, which is index funds, ETFs, and managed funds. And then you've got capital growth, so the increase in value, right? So if you were invested in, say, a managed fund, so let's say you put $20,000 in to one that you find, you would expect to receive some sort of check or direct deposit, or how does that work?
Yeah, so most managed funds that I have seen will pay you a distribution, usually once yearly, and you have an option. You can either reinvest that money back into the fund, your investment, so that just grows in the background. You won't receive any money in your bank account, but it just keeps growing and compounding, or you can have the money paid out into your bank account if you've got a better use for it, or some people often are living off those distributions from funds and exchange traded funds.
Yeah, so it might pay 2 or 3%, just as an example.
I do it for quite a few of my investments. I just reinvest the distributions or the dividends back into the fund or ETF, so it just ticks along in the background because I don't need to live off that income while I'm working.
Right. Okay. And before I jump ahead, just so people know what a managed fund is, it's just where you give someone some money. Like, you don't give it to them, but you say, professional investor, here's $10,000.
So you, for some reason, whatever they've done, you think they have better skills than you to manage your money. Or they might have a way to access a different market, whether that be an international stock market, maybe property and infrastructure. So they can access and do something better than you can with your money. And so you're paying them a management fee to do that. And then hopefully they're going to outperform the benchmark that they set.
Okay. So when we talk about managed funds and ETFs, what we're saying is that you as a personal investor, you just putting your money with another organization, like a company or an individual professional, and they do it for you, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of like, instead of buying individual shares yourself, you just send them the money and then they do it.
Yeah, and it increases your diversification as well, because if you only have a small amount of money, if you're just buying one share, then that your risk is all in that one share, tied up with that one share. But if you can buy an exchange traded fund or invest in a managed fund, then you're exposed to everything that's inside that investment.
Okay, so that would be a pretty helpful way for some people to invest who don't have the time or the curiosity to really go and about and do their own thing.
Especially if you're not that interested in finance, if you're not in the industry, if you've got better things to do with your life than nerd out over specific stocks, those products can be a good way to invest in a whole range of different stocks and asset classes without having to do too much digging into individual products.
Okay, cool. So we talked a bit about ETFs in another episode, didn't we?
Yeah.
So the way you'd buy a managed fund is you'd effectively find the one you want, fill out the PDS or like the paperwork.
Yeah, there'll be an application form. They'll check your ID and all that sort of stuff. And
yep.
They'll tell you where to send the money.
Yeah, of course.
Yes.
And with an ETF, you would use a share broking account, right, to buy that?
Yeah. So a lot of financial institutions offer them. There's also separate broker accounts. So it's just a way. They're usually free to set up. And then once you put the money in the associated bank account or set up that, you can buy your exchange-traded fund on the market and then you own X amount of units in that fund.
Right. Okay. So that's all making sense. Now, we've talked about super as well. That's another option that people have. Mandatory, or you can put extra in if you want to. If I'm not mistaken, you invest in a few different ways, but one of the ways you do it is through something called a robo-advisor.
Yeah.
So can you explain to listeners what that is?
Yeah. So the robo-advisor I use actually invests in a handful of different exchange-traded funds and a real estate investment trust, which we mentioned in the previous episode. But the experts are selecting the exact percentage in each fund and the exact funds to use, and they're managing my money for me. So the exchange-traded funds and real estate investment trusts are still in my name, but I'm not executing the buys and sells of this.
Right. So you don't have to it's even easier than an ETF. You don't have to pick, say, 3 or 4 ETFs. You could just go to this one robo-advisor, which is actually people that put...
There's an investment committee there and they make their decisions on which exchange-traded funds to build this diversified portfolio. I've told them my risk profile and then they make the decisions. They set up the brokerage account for you. They set up the cash management account. So they do all the heavy lifting for you. The only thing you have to do is give them money and they take a management fee for that. So that's another fee on top of the fees that the exchange-traded fund itself charges.
Okay. So we'll get to fees in a minute, but effectively, you can invest in shares or whatever, like a diversified portfolio.
Yeah.
And you just visit one of these robo-advisors and you put in who you are, what you own, your risk profile, you answer some questions, and then they set up the account for you.
Yep.
All right. And then you can just pay money in, or is it direct deposit or something like that?
Yeah. So just transferred money into that. So sort of off the calculations I ran at this stage, it's more cost effective for me, but down the track, it might be more cost effective for me to do it myself. But as I'm getting started and just at that entry level, this is a solution that I've chosen for myself.
So what you mean is that when you're starting out, it's good to just maybe consider handballing some of the responsibility to one of these low cost providers.
Yeah, it could be. I know you have the exchange traded fund portfolio where you have three that make up that, but so there's different. Often it's good to look at someone else's layout, just getting started on working out what is the best exchange-traded fund to use, because there's so many out there. It can get pretty daunting when getting started. There's a few big names in Australia that most people gravitate towards, but also it's just sort of when you're getting started, there's so many things to consider that sometimes it can be easier to get someone else to sort of direct you in the right.
Okay, so like, let's bring it home. So my investment portfolio was worth zero.
Yeah.
And I have $2,000 and I want to invest that. Effectively, these robo-advisors, instead of having to pick individual shares, which I might get wrong because I'm new, and instead of having to pick individual ETFs and go through the rigmarole of opening an account, like a brokerage account, I could, even easier than that again, I might just be able to put that, I might be able to go to a robo-advisor, which is really just this committee of people that make decisions, and then I put in
and they execute the
answer questions on a website.
Yeah.
And then I just deposit the money effectively.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that is one way to do it. Some of them have higher minimum starting amounts than 2,000. So
what are we talking about?
10,000.
Okay.
I know some of them have 5,000.
Right. So, but okay. So then I suppose that's, you know, which one do you want, right?
Like, but if you do some ETFs. Research, and there's even exchange traded funds that track the whole world. now. And I think you were showing me one the other day that actually has a bit, it's pretty much a diversified portfolio in itself. So there are options out there that you can get started just with the $500 and do it yourself and pay no one any fees except the provider of the exchange traded fund.
Okay. So that's interesting. That's the way that you've gone about it.
Yeah.
I would differ slightly. How do I say it? But I would buy an ETF straight away. That's what I would do. And the way I'd do that is I'd open a share broking account, which allows you to buy ETFs or shares and a few other things. And then I would buy an ETF and the exchange traded fund, because it's just like you buy one thing and it gives you exposure to a whole range of things. If you've got $500 or $2,000, you could put it all in one, or you could put it in a few different ones, because it's minimum's normally $500. So you could, you know, do some research or pay someone to do it for you, and then you could pick the three that you want and just click buy in your brokerage account. And like, I take your point about the robo advisors. I think it's a really good way to do it. But I also think if you have to save to $10,000, it's going to keep a lot of people out.
And you want to get in if you can as quickly as possible.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, and the thing is, you are learning again. You know, you're going to make mistakes, etc. But if you do it, if I was new today, the way I'd probably do it is I'd go to an ETF provider. Like, I'd learn about the ETFs. Yeah,
look, their websites have full education sections now. So there's...
And we've got some stuff that we'll put in the show notes, of course. There'll be heaps of information there. And we've talked about it before on Investing 101. I would probably I'd consider putting money in an ETF. And then I'd go another ETF and another ETF. And then over time, I would probably look at maybe incorporating individual shares or going to a robo-advisor or, you know, just changing up. Because if you go from, say, zero to $20,000, you're going to make mistakes in that time, but at the same time, you don't have too many options until you get to that kind of $20,000 mark, because a lot of these managed funds have minimums like $10,000, $20,000. And if you put it all in one of them, then you're exposed to only one. Whereas ETFs are a really good way to do it. I'm sure over time these robo-advisors will bring down the minimums as they get bigger, but they're still pretty new.
And it's still – the brokerage in Australia is still quite high.
Still pay like $10 for every...
So brokerage in the US is so much cheaper than in Australia. So that is one thing that does affect sort of your returns. If you are wanting to add in small amounts every month, the brokerage can add up, which can be a bit nasty.
And what we mean by brokerage is like when you use your share brokerage account and you buy something, it might be $10 to buy a parcel of investments, like one ETF or one share. And that's automatically deducted.
So there's fees in that brokerage going off to the Australian Stock Exchange. There's fees going to all sorts of different places. But it's sort of the administration and the middleman fee for actually executing that purchase or sale.
Okay. So we've talked about the options there. And that once again, you can go to Canstar or any of those other comparison sites to learn more about brokerage accounts. We've got some information we'll put in the show notes too, of course. One of the things that Warren Buffett says, and this is tying back to our lessons at the beginning of this episode, is that the stock market is a device for transferring money from the impatient to the patient. So the people that want to get rich quick to the people that are just happy to get rich. Doesn't matter how long.
If you're putting your $50 a week just for every week for a year, it's not going to change your life. But over 30 years, it can change your life exponentially.
One of the times when this happens, and it's very obvious, is when there's people that are clearly focused on the short term and it goes to people, the money goes to the people that are focused on the long term, is when there's a market crash. And that's when prices might fall by 10, 20%, 30% in a year, maybe even more. And what happens is the people who are focused, who are really impulsive and don't have that regimented savings plan and investing plan, they'll panic and they'll sell. And what they're doing is they're selling at the worst possible time because they think it's, you know, this is the worst thing ever. The world's going to explode. XYZ country is invading XYZ country, like blah, blah, blah. There's so many things to think about. But I found this fascinating when I did a bit of research on this, is that on average, and I think this comes from a Deutsche Bank, so an investment company did this study, and they found that the share market corrects on average every 357 days or once a year. So if you think about that, once a year, you can expect something bad to happen. Right, on average, it doesn't happen.
And some people see that as an opportunity to add some additional funds to their investments.
That's right. So if you were the person that was here building up an ETF portfolio for the first time, you've got to be prepared that that's going to happen. You know, this is going to happen. But Don't be the one that then goes, oh my God, the world's going to explode and everything's... And it does sound pretty scary.
Yeah.
Especially when you don't know what you're doing, but it's important to stay the course here.
Yeah.
And this comes back to what we said at the start of the episode, which was there's three things. The amount that you save, so you're starting with whatever balance, the return that you get, and how long do you have to invest. If you deny yourself any of those three, you're not going to be successful.
Yeah.
So one of the things is if you just sell out, then you're never going to be able to compound your money because it's not being able to, you're not giving it the opportunity.
And there's repeat offenders who just keep selling out, investing at the top of the market, selling it out at the bottom just because they never sort of understand that concept that there is market volatility and the market will go up and it will go down.
Mm.
And you have to be prepared to ride it all out.
Mm. Absolutely you do. Absolutely you do. So that's what we call, you know, that's market crash. It's about as bad as it gets.
Mm.
But it's my philosophy is prepare for the worst, expect the best.
Yeah.
And so if you go back 30 years and you take the share market's performance from then till today, on average, you'll find that it's grown at a rate of, say, between 8 and 12%, somewhere in there. And in that time, we've had September 11, the dot-com crash, the Asian crisis. That was a bit earlier. We had the global financial crisis, Donald Trump getting elected. we've had all of our Australian prime ministers who are just...
Possibility of Brexit.
Brexit. We've had wars, Iraq war.
Yeah.
We've had The Shire was on Channel 10 that was aired. Can you believe that? Like, these are just like the worst things that it's could have happened in the world. And all jokes aside, the share market has still grown, still performed well, right? Even though there are times when things had fallen 50 or 60%.
Yeah.
You know what? Prepare for the worst, but be optimistic about the future because bad things are going to happen, but that's okay. You know, the world isn't as bad as people think. And, you know, you could say the same thing right now that there's a whole things to, heap of things to worry about, but just be positive.
Yeah.
And if you go to Vanguard's website, which is an ETF provider, name drop, if you go to Vanguard, there's a real cool chart and we'll link to it in the show notes.
And you can order one and stick it on your wall as well.
That's right.
I may or may not have done that.
Oh, cool. So you can, so there's a chart there that you can get. And you can put in like different time frames and you can see how the share market has performed versus
and how
like
each
property.
Asset class has done as well.
Yeah. And you can even put like the US presidents, you can put Australian prime ministers, you can put all different types of like little things on there. And then it shows you all the different outcomes.
Yeah.
And no matter what, from left, from bottom left to top right, the share market and all the other markets tend to do better.
Yeah.
And that's because the world's just getting better.
Yeah.
Right?
And that chart, if you are still thinking that cash is king, that chart really illustrates the difference over sort of like the last many decades of how cash has performed versus the Australian, versus the US, versus the global share market as well. So that's
a really
interesting
good one.
As well.
Yeah. So don't take our word for it. Just go and look at that chart and it will change your world. Okay. So one of the things we touched on earlier on is about fees.
Mm.
The fees are typically coming down across the industry. And we did this example at the beginning of the show, which was save $50 a week, which is pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
You invest it, you get a 10% return, and that's not excluding, like that's after fees. So it's a pretty good return. It may, not, may or may not be achievable, but anyway. And then you do that for 30 years. And we said that you come out with $428,000.
Yeah.
Right. We just did another example using the same calculator, but we did the same thing, but with 1% in fees. So instead of paying, instead of returning 10%, you return 9%. Right?
Yep.
It's a very small difference in the face of it. Right? You think, oh, 1% of fees, I only got $5,000 invested, bugger all. Well, under the same scenario, that $428,000 becomes $355,000.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, you're paying 1% in fees, but you're getting 17% less at retirement or whatever this goal is that you have for yourself after 30 years. So the point here is that the smallest, smallest little difference can have a huge impact down the line.
Yeah.
And the way I think about that is, imagine like if you have a set of binoculars and you're looking a long way away at your financial goal, might be retirement or whatever. If you tilt those binoculars down or you shake a little bit, you're going to be looking at something totally different to what you were looking at in the distance. And that's the way I think about it is that if you just make a tiniest little change, it can have a huge impact on what you're actually looking at.
And it's the Money Smart calculator. You can actually compare two different interest rates side by side. So put 7% and then take off your 1% fee, put 6% and actually see the difference between what you might have in 30 years with 7 and what you might have with 6. And that really sort of illustrates the point of how nasty high fees can be over, it might not look like anything in a year. You might, oh, that's hardly anything, but over 30 years, massive.
Yep.
And they don't send you a bill. You just, it just,
it's all automatic. Taken. All these fees are automatic.
So you don't, if you got served a bill for $1,000, $10,000 just in fees, you'd probably go, what am I actually getting out of these fees? You would question it. But because you don't get a bill, because it's not really highlighted how much you're actually paying in fees, you don't notice it.
Mm, absolutely.
Until it's too late.
So there's a, from the British comedian John Oliver, he said, think of fees like termites. They're tiny, they're barely noticeable, and they can eat away at your fluffing future.
Yeah.
And that's fluffing is obviously, I put that in there. Redacted was the word I should have used. So they can eat away at your future. And that's true. They're like termites. They just take little bits lots of times and you don't even notice it. So
yeah. And sometimes people end up paying higher fees for active fund managers or ETFs because they might be claiming to outperform the market or trying to do something really impressive. There's just some very fancy ETFs now that you can get that are doing all sorts of weird and wonderful things. But I guess that comes down to sometimes being happy with average performance of the market and not being too greedy. Sometimes these active fund managers can entice you in by greed and you're thinking, oh, I'm going to get 20% return, so I'm happy to pay 2% fees. But over 30 years, they're probably not going to outperform the market.
That's right. We're still here. So what I want to clarify there is active.
Yeah.
So the difference between active and passive and average. So people who invest professionally, such as myself, we claim that we can pick individual shares or businesses and then own those shares for a longer period of time and we can do better than what you would do if you were investing in index fund,
yeah.
Which is an index fund just tracks the market. So like the ASX 200, the Dow Jones, whatever you see on the news, that's normally the average.
Yeah.
So when we talk about averages in the share market, we talk about the ASX 200, the Dow Jones. And what you find is all of the studies that have been done are based on those types of averages, yeah. Not like what's the average of all these different share prices. What actually what those averages are the ASX 200 and all the rest of it. Anyway, so what studies have found is that, especially recently, is that about 70 to 90% of people that actively invest, like professional investors, do worse than those averages.
Yeah.
So if you think about that, there's a 70 to 90% chance that you're going to do worse than average, right?
Mm.
And people don't really understand, but a lot of that has to do with fees.
Yeah.
And sometimes the people that pick the shares for you are just terrible at what they do.
Yeah.
It's just reality. So there's always going to be some laggards, but then there's going to be fees that detracting from
and
the
often,
future.
And often active funds will underperform the benchmark by their fees.
That's right,
because
they're
1% or 2%.
Yeah. And that's 1% or 2% extra that professional has to be better.
Yeah.
Just to make up for their own costs. So we're seeing fees come down, but this is an issue with managed funds. It's less so with ETFs because they're mostly index funds. They're not active.
Yeah, but there are active.
There are active ETFs. So you have to be careful.
Yeah. So you just know what you're buying before you buy it because the active ETFs will be following an actively managed strategy and they'll often charge you a higher fee to do so.
Yeah. So what we're saying is when you invest in an ETF, don't just go and just throw a dartboard of names. Actually look at what they do. Find the fees. Yeah. Like, it's my opinion, but anything over, say, if in an ETF, anything over 0.5% or what we call 50 basis points, 0.5% is too much. You don't need to spend that amount of money.
And if you want the ASX 200, but for some reason you buy an active ETF, you're not getting the ASX 200. Yeah. You're getting some actively managed strategy.
So if you want to see the performance of the ASX 200 reflected in your portfolio, what Kate's saying is that an active investor doesn't do that.
Yeah.
Whereas an index investor or passive investor does do that. So it's an important distinction. I've got a video that I've done on the RAS Finance website for this, if you want to know more about the differences between the two. But just remember that index is normally what you see on the news and active is whereas an individual is picking and choosing what's good. But the statistics are stacked against them. Okay, so we've covered a few things, Kate. Let's just go action points.
Yeah. So how do we actually invest in exchange-traded funds, managed funds, and index funds? So exchange-traded funds are probably the quickest once you have a brokerage account set up. Once you've set that up, you can just go in and buy them. It's just like buying anything else online. just say how many you want and what price you want to pay for it, and then execute your order.
Yep. And then RoboAdvisor, you would go to their website, you'd find the RoboAdvisor you want. I advise you to do some reading about that.
Yeah.
RoboAdvisor, maybe get some reviews, and then you could just fill out the forms as requested, as when prompted. And then once again, just like with the share brokerage account, you deposit money, I imagine. Yep.
And then fund manager. If you manage funds, just going through the fund manager, sometimes they might use a third-party administrator. So they'll all have similar application forms where you will have to fill in declarations and say you agree to the product disclosure statement and those sort of things. They'll have to do identity checks, but then you just transfer the money and they'll issue you units.
So that's on the fund manager's website. So you go, yep, okay.
And so every product should have detailed information on their website about the fees they charge, what they invest in, what their scope is, how much they'll invest in X amount of product share, all that sort of things.
PDS, is that right?
Yeah, and that should be in the product disclosure statement as well. Yep.
So you can, if you're confused, you can just go, you can Google and then insert the name of the thing that you're trying to invest in, and then PDS, and it should come up with like a PDF.
Though I have seen some robo advisors actually can issue a statement of advice instead of a product disclosure statement. So that's okay, one so thing. Something similar.
Just call them if you're confused.
Yeah.
And Super, you can invest in. We've talked about this, but just quickly, you can BPAY money in.
Yeah. Yep. And some really low-cost super funds do actually use exchange-traded funds themselves. So
there you go. So they're just doing it for you. Mm. And index funds are pretty much the same as managed funds. Yep. Just apply on their website. But you can do it through an ETF if you want to. It's probably easier. Okay. So other action points going back over the episode. Key takeaways are start now.
Yep.
Unless you want to retire next week. Or die next week, I should say.
Yeah. It's a long-term. It's a long-term play.
Yep.
And you have to be ready to ride out the volatility up and downs of the market, and you need to be able to be comfortable through that. And that's why it's a good idea to start small, because you can build your confidence and learn as you go. So every $50 you invest, you can learn a bit more about investing and build your confidence up. So once it's 5 years down the track and you've got maybe 10 or 20, 30,000 invested, you're a lot more confident about how the stock market works and where your money is actually invested in.
Cool. And one thing to remember is that the share markets and most markets, not just shares, do crash and they do correct.
Yeah.
And it's going to happen. So just prepare for it as best you can. Emergency cash balances, blah, blah, blah. Long-term strategies.
Yeah. And I think the last one is always, always, always look at the fees of whatever you're investing in. And I think that applies to any service or product in the finance industry. You always look at the fees before you invest, and have a look at the difference between multiple products and whether the higher fee you're paying is actually worth what you might be getting from it.
Cool. Questions, they can come to the rastfinance.com.
Yep. And I'm on Twitter at HowToMoneyAustralia. So we'd love to hear from you if you have any feedback, suggestions or questions for future episodes.
Absolutely, we would. All right, Kate, thanks for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you very much, Owen.